Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
And I am back with an all-new episode of Keep It, but I'm in New York.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
I am once again joined by Aminatu So.
Hey.
Are you happy to be back?
Yo, you are the only person that can get me in a Manhattan studio. So you need to understand that this is delightful.
The power. Hannah Georges.
Hello.
How's it going? You are here.
I am. Despite the rain and the nonsense, I am here.
A vision in orange, I must say.
Thank you. I have
loved Hannah since we were back in the trenches.
Oh my God.
at BuzzFeed.
I always forget.
Y'all were in the same digital minds. I forget about this.
We were.
And now you are killing it at The Atlantic.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm in New York. That's why Kara and Lewis are not here at the moment. Please do not attack me online.
I think you mean please do not attack Amina and Hannah online.
Right.
We are just guests.
Right.
Your regular host will be back next week.
Please don't get angry
at us.
Thanksgiving episode. But ooh. I just wanted to let people know I was in New York for a wedding.
Okay. And who got married?
One of my best friends of 11 years.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
Congrats to you.
I was looking good.
Do you like being a wedding guest?
You know what? When I was like a barista, no. Because I was like, how am I going to put this outfit together? How far do I have to travel? Now I'm like, a suit, some new shoes. Let's turn it up for the gram.
Thank God we're rich. Yeah. Love it.
All right. The usage of we is curious.
Listen, by rich, I just really mean thank God we have access to credit that we did not used to have.
Yes. And then when I leave here, I am flying to Paris.
Okay. Ida is rich.
All right.
I'm going to tell you this.
All right.
He has a passport, first of all. Oh. He's got stamps. You're part of Black Travel Twitter now.
Oh, I can't.
Wait.
No.
Do you remember when Amanda Seals on Twitter was like, if you're not spending your money on a passport.
Instead of some Jordans. I said, sis, what?
Yeah, but man, yeah, it's so wild how travel, Instagram travel is such a thing in a way that you both want to celebrate and also you want to throw everybody off a bridge at the same time.
Right.
I like Instagram travelers more because I feel like my friends who travel on Instagram are just always on vacation.
Yeah.
I'm like, they must either be rich
or they went for,
I have one friend who I know went to Mexico City or Cuba for a week. Those photos have been rolling out for 8 months.
That's how you do it. Later, Graham.
Right. Social strategy. Let's go.
I'm like, you were at the bar last night. You are not in Havana.
No. Give us a TBT. I don't care.
You left the country one time 10 years ago. Roll it out slowly. Listen, I don't disagree with that. I think it's okay. It's just that it has become such a status symbol to travel.
Travel Twitter is even worse.
American travel Twitter is just very bad. Some of us travel because African travel Twitter is always...
Afropolitan Twitter is...
Afropolitan everything is terrible.
See, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's
Hannah and I have feelings because we're diaspora babies. So, it's where all of our blacknesses intersect.
Yeah.
The bad parts of it are really amplified.
Right. Mm. It's very I'm going to Lagos, but I was just in London. It's a specific kind of diplomat type. All of the things sort of wrapped in one in a way that I think American travel Twitter's problems are largely around class.
Right. And the thing about like diaspora Afropolitan travel also is that it's not honest about the reality of immigration. Like, that's why it makes me really mad. It's like in this backdrop of the conversation that we're having about, you know, the evil travel caravan that is coming to invade us, that there is not a more nuanced conversation about, like, I feel this acutely because I am part of this population. And to be clear, like, I'm an African person who is also an asylee. Like, I travel under a refugee passport. It is not easy, you know, but I'd be going places. you know, but, like, there's never this acknowledgement of, like, yes, like, self-care, sure, like, you're traveling, but also borders are a real thing that a lot of people have to contend with.
Right.
And so to treat it as this, you know, like, cavalier thing of privilege as opposed to having a deep conversation about who is allowed to go places and what it means when you go places, or especially for African people when we travel and we're jet setting, we're just going to visit family. Nobody is doing, like, you know, we're not paying for hotels in Lagos. Nope. We are not paying for like Airbnbs in Addis. Like, we are going to visit our families.
Yeah.
And so, like, you can't floss when you share a bed with your grandma is all I'm saying.
Or, like, you know, put her in a picture, like, at least one, you know? Don't, like, it's frustrating, I think. And, like, the sort of idea that all of us have equal access to travel is a really frustrating one, right? Like, my mom can't hop on certain flights. You know, it's just, let's get into that a little bit, as opposed to the, like, sort of reflexive, well, Africans have wealth, too. And just so you know, like, this stereotype isn't real. It's like, who are we doing this for? Why are we performing
that? I know, but, like, as an African person.
That's what Chadwick Boseman
talked about. Oh, my God.
Well, the Wakanda Travel Agency, on the other hand, is an equal opportunity travel
agency.
Wakanda
flights are now going to 7 different countries.
But Hannah, doesn't it drive you a little nuts? Like, for me, when I talk to other African people who do not under, like, whenever there is a judgment of why African-Americans do not travel, or why they're why they're so excited that, you know, that they're like, I don't know, 27 and you're getting a passport for the first time, that there's not an acknowledgement from a lot of African people that there are structural reasons for why African-Americans for a long time did not travel. I was like, well, I'm like, have you heard of Jim Crow laws?
Like,
have you heard of the Green Travel Book?
Have you the suburbs? Let alone Lyon.
I was like, they didn't let them go to the beach. Like, I don't know what you're thinking, right? Or the fact that, like, this is generational, right? It's like, if your parents grew up in a way where travel is restrictive, and then you add on top of that, like, college debt and, like, all sorts of things, there are reasons that people are discovering, like, Chiang Mai as adults, and for, like, very, I don't know. I feel strongly about this because I come from a community of, like, bratty diplomat kids. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we were the kid, like, the first time I was on a plane, I was 10. Like, I've been an unaccompanied minor my whole life. You know, that thing. But I just wish, like, Black people would have unified, like, nuanced conversations.
And when you think of the people who do go to Europe, it's always, you know, it's like, oh, you know, Tina Turner fled to Europe. You know, it's like James Baldwin wrote there. It was always just sort of expats Baker. Who had to flee to America from racism. You know, it wasn't like, I'm just taking a little excursion here in between semesters.
Right. But like, Nina Simone's not like, I love Switzerland, so I'm out here skiing, you know?
Oh, my God.
It's like, that's not what's going on, you know?
A famous Nina Simone quote. No, I think that...
Switzerland mountain.
Young, gifted
Switzerland mountain,
skier.
No.
Bare strange snow.
Young, black, and skied.
Y'all, we could talk about travel all day, but we have a show to do.
Fine, I guess.
Coming up later, we will be joined by playwright Jeremy O'Harris. He has a new play. It is called Slave Play, and it's opening up at the New York Theater Workshop.
Just something like
Slave Play. Okay.
I told a friend that I saw Jeremy's play. He was like, oh, that is a title.
It is. It's provocative.
And
now I want to trick every, like, white podcast anchor into saying it. I was like, can you read this ad for me, please?
And later we'll be talking about the midterms. And
who's that? Who is she?
Just a little recap.
I've never felt that emotion. I don't know her.
Listen, there was a blue...
Oh, you talking about that blue Kool-Aid y'all been talking about?
There's a blue, I think it was sprinkling outside.
It's sprinkling.
A light drizzle.
A drizzle. A blue drizzle. A blue drizzle of hope.
We'll be right back. And we're back. Last week, Pete Davidson got himself in some hot water when he likened newly elected Republican congressional candidate Dan Crenshaw to a hitman from a porno due to the fact that he has an eye patch, which he wears after he lost an eye serving in Afghanistan. A lot of people were upset about this online. Kenan Thompson even told him that he missed the mark with his joke. And
Kenan Thompson is doing public statements. This is wild.
From orange soda to public statements. Mm. But then on Saturday, Pete apologized on Weekend Update while also being joined by Dan Crenshaw, who made some jokes about Pete, and they had a good old laughing time. Except for the fact that none of us are talking about the fact that he is part of the alt-right.
Okay.
He is pro-gun, anti-abortion, anti-affordable.
He was caught on a Facebook group. Like, that's, you need to explain
Care
what
Act.
Happened.
Yes.
I hate
He's
that
also
sentence.
On a far-right Facebook group called The Tea Party.
Which is a Nazi group.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not like fake Nazis. It's like legit Nazis. Right.
Yes.
And now the media is portraying him as like the decent face of the Republican mm-hmm. Party. Which
right.
Is...
All of the tweets were just sort of people being like, thank you so much to Pete for honoring our vets.
Okay. Can I say many things about this? First of all, SNL, why is it on? Why do we talk about it?
Correct.
That's a different story. The second thing, I am ashamed to say that I actually watched the clip, and they should replace everybody on SNL with the Nazi guy because he was hilarious.
Okay, yeah.
His delivery was great. I was like, oh my God, you are a better actor than all of these
right,
people.
Right, right.
I feel conflicted about that.
Well, you
but
gotta get people, well, you gotta be good if you wanna get people into the Nazi party.
It's
like, you
true.
Have to be charismatic.
So, to be fair, he is charismatic, he was charming. Listen, all I'm saying is that, like, if he gave me a pamphlet
Pete, no,
on his Tea Party
didn't
Facebook
have the charisma
group,
to keep
I would look
Ariana.
Into
okay, well, that's
Crenshaw
a whole other,
has the charisma to get you to be a Nazi.
Why?
That's why he was an administrator.
Why do you think? Well, actually, I think we all know the answer to this. I am frustrated with Pete Davidson because it's one thing to have like a very public breakup, but it's another thing to keep like shoving it down all of our throats.
Right.
You know? And also, I was like, you were a relevant person. You were not as relevant as the person that you
Certainly
were dating.
Not.
It just is giving me shades of like how Justin Timberlake still talks about Britney Spears
and Cry Me
like
River,
very
yes.
terrible.
Yes,
you know, and everybody lets it slide. I was right. like, actually,
I dragged him last week.
I was like, this is part of, but you know what I mean? It is like truly part. I was like, this is all misogyny. I don't like
yeah.
this.
Yeah,
you're like, you broke up with somebody. Like, sure, we've all read about it, whatever. Also, Ariana maybe now knows that you can't date people just because they're tall. You know,
right.
like, that'll confuse you about everything.
I thought that this one, this reference was actually slightly funny because it was, once again, Dan's, like, phone rang at the end of the thing, and it was Ariana's new single.
I know, but
and
it's
I
like,
was like
young
well,
woman
give her
is
that
punchline, so. I know,
but it was like, give her that promo.
Well, sure.
She doesn't need that promo from
She's
like SNL.
One, right?
SNL is who is getting promo from her.
She
you
was
know
promoing
I mean?
Her to the alt-right, Amina.
She doesn't need that.
Okay.
They already have Taylor Swift.
They're over, not
looking
no, they're
for
over Taylor.
No,
they're over
not.
Taylor.
They don't have her
Taylor
anymore.
Told people to vote.
It's true.
Taylor
had to disassociate herself. It's not going to be Ariana, but you know, I'm just like, I'm just tired of all these men. The commentary was dumb. And also, it just feeds back into the fakeness of decorum that we love
right.
in this country. The Pete Davidson's joke was bad. It was bad. It was rude. He should not have said it.
I actually thought the joke was funny.
Listen, I hate when people make jokes like that, like liberal people, and then they know that it's risky, and then they apologize immediately.
Right.
I was like, say it with your whole chest or don't say it at all.
Exactly.
Well, yes.
Because
you
are...
know, you knew that it was going to be a controversial joke
right.
because he lost
exactly.
an eye. So either own it or
either
don't.
Either own it or don't. But then don't make it about how, like, the rest of us all have to, like, talk to our neighbors and we have
no,
to whatever.
I don't
was
have
like,
to do anything.
I don't need to learn a lesson about decorum or kindness or anything from SNL or Pete Davidson. Like, I am happy with how I live my life. Like,
right.
Thank you very much.
Well, it also, I think, in all the discourse about stuff like this, right, it becomes about vets in general
mm-hmm.
and, like, the military and not about this one individual person or, like, this individual interaction, right? So then the rest of us have to bear the weight of the larger conversation. It's like, why are we doing this?
It's
again,
sort of
it's
like
the
with
protest.
The police,
yeah.
You know, where it's like one person, we can't talk about this one person being bad, you know?
Right.
It's always like, Blue Lives Matter. And, you know, it's like, Now it's like,
I'm like, you're not even blue.
What is
like,
a blue life?
Yeah.
What is a blue? Are you Smurf? Smurf Lives Matter.
Fuck everywhere. Blue lives. Mariah is skinny. Do you remember that meme?
Yes.
For everyone just now, there's someone was like responding to Tommy Lahren, who was going on and on about Blue Lives Matter, and literally a Mariah Carey fan responded, fuck blue lives. Mariah is skinny. And the funniest part about that thing is it became like a meme, but also Kat McPhee at one point liked that tweet. And then Tommy Lahren tweeted, I thought that you were better than this, Kat McPhee. And I'm like, it wasn't Kat McPhee, it's the gay intern who tweets for her.
Levels. But also, Ira, I will say that you were breaking black code. We don't say her name, remember?
Who?
Tomato Lasagna. Like, we can't say her name.
I'm sorry.
It's the only good thing Wale did for us.
Well, you know what?
Like, say her name wrong.
I only said it once. I only said it once, okay? If I say it two more times, she will appear and make me listen to Charlamagne.
Okay, the levels of where this conversation has gone are really scaring me. Let's back away from this cul-de-sac of Oval
Anyway, Hannah, you were talking about the fact that, you know, like, we are always sort of pressed into this...
like, referendum.
Deference and, right, you know, right, to people who are, like, in the military. And it's like, can we acknowledge that this person, yes, was in Afghanistan, and yes, he did fight to defend our country, but in his mind, he was fighting to defend the white people.
Right, or it's just a use, it's just a distraction in the sense that, oh God, I hate that word too now.
Distraction. Like, everything's a distraction.
Everything in the ocean.
I know, this president, it's like words don't mean things anymore.
Right, nothing, yeah. But just, you know, so we move away from talking about the individual occurrence that happened and like what Pete Davidson is, or who this specific person that we're talking about is and what they stand for, and suddenly it becomes, again, the larger question of patriotism and whether or not like people are upholding that. And that's not what we started talking about.
And dissent is patriotic. Like, the reason that we can be proud that we have a military that fights for us is that they fight for these rights that we should all have.
Right.
And so
you can't speak.
Right. So it's like the way that the paternalism always asserts itself is that people in uniform are somehow they're more worthy of, you know, like every single right. But truly, it's just like, you know, as a famous activist once said, watch whiteness work. Like, what's really happening here is that...
I love A. Marie.
You know what I mean? There are people... this conversation frustrates me because I used to work with veterans. I worked in an organization called Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And in this generation, we have the lowest contact with veterans. They're the fewest number of people in service. And so, therefore, they're not in the cultural and public consciousness in the way that they should be. And veterans, like, especially of this generation, people that are our age and people that are younger, are actually people who are very complicated. They are three-dimensional people. They have very complicated feelings about why they served and, you know, and what happened and policy or whatever. They are undoubtedly brave people. They are patriots, but they're also not, they're not assholes. They're not the ones who are like, hey, I'm in a uniform, so like treat me better. That's, you know, it's like the people who do that are people in power who are trying to divide all of us.
Right. It's weird for me because I actually
use them as shields.
Right, or like rhetorical.
I actually grew up, you know, in a, you know, military and sort of police family. So it's like I am used to seeing them as people. You know, my grandmother was a sergeant major in the Army.
Right. There's like people of color in the service.
My mother was a sheriff in Milwaukee. You know,
what?
My sister works for a correctional facility in Indiana. My uncle, who I got my middle name for, was in the Marines. You know, so it's like I am used to, so then I always was around, you know, sort of like military people, especially since we used to travel with my grandmother, depending on where she was stationed. And so I have just always had this sort of, yes, respect for the military, and especially knowing that many people in my family did it, but also seeing them as real people and not having that sort of reverence, you know, like there's Zeus on high, you know, Zeus. Particularly because
Zeus of all the gods.
Particularly because, you know, it's funny that you talk about, like, you know, the military will make someone more, like a uniform will make someone more worthy,
yeah,
when it's often sort of the people who have no other opportunities in our society who we make become like,
right,
police officers and soldiers.
Totally.
You know,
it's not like we're paying them millions of doubloons to like do these,
right,
jobs.
It's for some, it's like, oh, to pay their college tuition.
The or only like, opportunity, yes, to leave your small town, the like how you get an education, how you can buy a house, all of that stuff.
Right. And then afterward are treated sort of by social services as though they don't matter either.
And afterward, so the president won't even visit you.
Right.
Because it's raining. Right.
Listen, his, if I had a spray tan like that and my hair was as delicate, I would also consider visiting a memorial in the rain. So, as somebody who spray tans once a year to keep my Beyonce on, I have complicated feelings about the president not showing up this weekend. But, you know, like the other thing about the military, though, that I was going to say is that the thing about it that is I wish like more people would pay attention to is that who the people are that are pushing the message of like, you know, like military lives matter above everybody else. It's like, what are the actions of those people?
Right.
If we lived in a world where veterans did not have to wait like hundreds of days for the services that they have fought for,
right,
if they didn't have to struggle so much with mental health resources that we're not giving them, or, you know, like we actually did something for like the wife, the spouses and the families of veterans who are always traveling and always disrupted. It's like, okay, I'm down to like listen to a message from a party or a people or a society that actually puts veterans first, but we don't. They're completely disrespected all the time. Veterans Day is literally just like one big mattress sale every year. You know, it's like Starbucks is like, here, have some free stuff. It's all about capitalism.
Right.
And so the fact that SNL, you know, like gives some like credence to that, like, right, drives me nuts, because I'm like, you are part of creating culture. So either celebrate veterans or like step off ultimately and, right, stop doing the bullshit that you're doing.
I felt bad because when I came to New York, I lost my debit card the first night. So I had to order, a new one. And they were like, I don't know if it's going to get here like Tuesday before you leave. And I was like, oh, why can't it get here on Monday? They were like, it's Veterans Day. And I was like, oh, Trump don't care about the veterans. Let me get my card. Oh my and it did come on Monday.
Well,
so I guess the Postal Service did not care.
Thank you for your service, Postal Service.
Thank you.
I've never said those words in my life.
Thank you for your service?
No, thanking the Postal Service.
Postman a tip at the end of the year?
My mom is no longer a sheriff. She now works for the Postal Service. So I support the Postal Service.
Okay. I love
the
Postal Service.
But you guys, I just want to make a plug
on this
podcast.
She always reads twice.
That at the end of the year, you should be giving a small present or a tip to your mail person. You should get to know them.
I don't know who my mail person is.
I do know my mail person.
Wild.
And he hits on me, so no.
I live in LA.
Okay, your mail person deserves nothing.
Okay, yeah. Time's up.
Time's up to your mail person.
You need to package a box and give it to your mailman. For
I love my mail lady. She's
say, my gift to you is a clock, because time's up. That's probably a very complicated way to just say, stop flirting with me, bitch.
I know. You could also just like, say,
spend a lot of money,
cut you next time you holler at me.
Nobody would believe that.
Finally, I just want, like, it's weird that SNL and NBC haven't really learned their lesson. You know, they brought Crenshaw out, they brought Trump out, and look what happened to him.
Like, must over his hair.
Yeah. You know, it was just like Fallon. You know, Trump did Fallon. Trump did SNL.
Right.
And now...
He's not even
now
funny.
Now people found this Crenshaw person. He was funny on the show.
They should hire him. So I was like, don't put him in charge of any policy.
Yes.
Put him on SNL.
I support this.
I'm okay with my taxes going to pay for all the Nazis to just do entertainment on SNL, a show nobody should watch.
Let him start a Gilly movie.
This is wild. This is really wild. What do you think, what's the deal, do you think, with, like, SNL never understanding, like, what line they're towing?
I don't know. I think that they do know what line that they're towing, though. I think the line is controversy and getting people talking.
Right.
It gets the people going.
But it's so clumsy. And it's like, you know, like, from a brand perspective, I was like, this certainly does not feel great. you know, I can't imagine what it's like to do, like, crisis PR over there. It's a nightmare. And also, it's not funny and it's not good.
Well, that's the thing, right? If there were controversy and it were funny, you might be able to wave it away a little more easily. Now it's like, well, we're just getting riled up and you're just upsetting people. And at the core of it, most of the time, is just a pretty clumsy sketch.
Right. Mm. Well, that's right.
Well, Dan Crenshaw, if you would like a job on Keep It, come do some one-liners.
Dan Crenshaw's Keep It. He would be like, racial equality, keep it. Women's movement, keep it.
I'd be like, sir, I disagree, but you delivered that very well, so good job. When we're back, we'll chat with Jeremy O. Harris, whose new play, Slay Play, is opening up at the New York Theater Workshop this December.
What a name.
Keep It is brought to you by Hinge. Hinge is the dating app designed to be deleted.
If you're really good at it, that is. I've actually met several really good friends through Hinge. I've used it, I can't believe this, over a decade now. Woof, what a life I've had.
Well, you know what they've added within a decade of us being on Hinge is their new LGBTQIA plus prompts, which are designed to help queer daters better connect based on similarities, interests, and compatibility.
Hinge prompts helps you show off your full personality and connect with someone who appreciates you. Plus, these prompts were created in collaboration with GLAAD, so they are by the people, for the people. Some of the prompts are, the first time I knew I was gay was, I was literally in the act of being gay, like hooking up with somebody when I admitted it. Denial is strong and hard in the Catholic Midwest.
Mine was Tom Cruise's Vanity Fair cover, the shirtless one.
You just turned to an imaginary camera and said, I'm gay.
Yeah. Or broke the fourth wall.
You're like Fleabag. Other prompts include, I feel proudest of who I am when, it feels affirming when others, blank, I connect to my community by, I wish I could tell the younger version of myself. I'm going to say, whenever I watch that in a Drag Race semifinal, when they're like, if I could talk to my younger self, I would say, I would be like, girl, get tighter clothes. I mean, what's going on with what you're wearing? You look like you're in the X Games. Other prompts include, my chosen family is the best at, and gender euphoria looks like. Download Hinge and show off your full self using their LGBTQIA plus prompts today. Then find someone worth deleting the app for.
Keep It is brought to you by Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop.
The early 2000s was a wild time for reality TV. I was there. I remember. There seemed to be an endless supply of shows that delivered entertainment for us, but trauma for children, like Dance Moms, the infamous Lifetime Network show where the studio owner screamed at children and their moms over several seasons. On each episode of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop, comedians join host Misha Brown to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question, who thought this was a good idea?
They recently looked behind the scenes of what was really going on at Abby Lee Miller's dance studio. Well, we know that someone created the beast known as JoJo Siwa.
You think we see the lab workings that created JoJo Siwa? Yeah. One pigtail, two pigtails.
And Chemical X. Abby's biggest misstep actually wasn't screaming nonsensical catchphrases or throwing chairs on television, but instead, she was choreographing financial fraud in plain sight.
Well, follow The Big Flop wherever you get your podcasts.
Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR and how I live my life every day.
Oh, I'm glad to bear witness to it.
Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of a struggle.
It sounds like you at Coachella. I'm already tuned in. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective, from Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations. There's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us. Without us.
Doesn't the Black experience sound like a 3-disc Prince album we never got? Someone check the vault, please. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. We are now joined by Jeremy O'Hara.
Hello.
Playwright, friend, fantastic person.
I mean, his color story is incredible.
The fashion is always on point.
On point. Like, the beanie has personality.
Yes.
The, like, brown on brown is lovely. And then the navy and the brown and the yellow. I'm telling you, the color story is epic. I'm really sad for a lot of people. This is a podcast.
Yeah.
This makes me feel really happy. I'm also, I don't know, I think I'm trying to get an Acne Studio sponsorship. So I just walk around in this beanie all the time. Even when people can't see my face, I'm like, I'm wearing acne. Someone is listening from acne.
Tell somebody from Acne better be listening.
It's the
best. Friend of mine has this really cute pink Acne sweater.
Oh my god! Well, yeah. They created Millennial Pink.
Okay,
the pink that is like the word that's the new vibe that's spreading.
Where's your T-neck from?
This is Gant, which is very Yale of me.
Okay,
it's like it's a very like, there's like a in Yale Gant, like just like truly, it's like if you go to Yale, you get 50% off.
50% off?
Actually, that might be a hookup. It might be a hookup from one of the managers for certain people. At Yale.
I'm like, I'm about to go back to undergrad.
Wow,
like, that tuition is worth it. Like, are you serious?
Okay, yes, I will pay the Yale tuition so I can get 50% off again.
Listen, I'm a refugee. Somebody is paying my Yale tuition.
I'm still paying Tish for grad school. I'm not going to Yale.
For the 50% off again, I would sponsor a GoFundMe for you to go to Yale.
Thank you.
Only one of us has to get in, and then we use the discount.
Right.
Well, Jeremy, I'm already in.
I will not contribute anything, but I will get stuff.
Your new play, it's called Slave Play.
It is called Slave Play.
And it is opening at the New York Theater Workshop. And we're going to talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
But we are four black people gathered. This is like...
Is everybody here black? You know that for sure?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you scamming on Instagram?
Listen,
I'm scamming on Instagram.
As a white woman, I'm, you know, who spray tans occasionally. I'm really glad it's working out for me.
This is basically black Pod Save America right now.
Oh my God.
Yo, isn't it always though?
Well,
yeah. Sorry, Lewis.
He might get a black card at the end of the year for Christmas.
Okay. You got to bring that up to the committee, first of all.
I think if you know as many Oscar movies as he does, you cannot be black. Like, I don't think that there's any, like, I mean, even the black woman who runs the Oscars doesn't know as many Oscar movies as
he
does.
You know what I mean? The black woman who runs the Oscars probably watches one black movie a year. She's just like, she's like, you got movie money all day, every day. I don't think so. But Lewis is blessed with many blacks in his life, so it's cool.
But since we're all gathered here, the midterms just happened.
Have they happened? Past tense?
We voted.
They're happening. Actually, we still counting ballots.
They are still going
they're
on.
They're happening.
It is like trying to read a Homer novel. I meant to say James Fry, more modern, but I couldn't remember that white man's name.
Did he release a new book?
That man is still writing.
I think they let him write another one.
I'm still reading the correction.
We're talking about the man.
Terms of France.
See, that is the blackest thing you've done all day.
Are you talking about Jonathan Franzen or the one who lied to Oprah in front of all of our faces?
A Million Little Pieces is James Fry.
See, that's why I went with Homer, because I couldn't remember this man's name.
Okay.
And I met the one who wrote the corrections and then wrote some book called, what was it? Freedom?
Yes.
And I remember being so mad when I had to go into a Barnes & Noble and ask for freedom.
Freedom?
From a white woman.
Freedom sounds like a book that a white South African would write that you have to read.
Oh, God.
That you have to read in, like, 10th grade English. You know what I'm saying?
And
we're all reading
really
it.
Tiny Charlize books. It's like 45 pages.
Freedom. Freedom is just what @CharliesAfrica tweets every day.
Enough.
Listen.
Who is @CharliesAfrica?
Charlize Theron. Twitter handle is CharliesAfrica.
Shut the fuck up.
Yes.
She's South African. Y'all know gotta let her cook.
Oh my God.
I will not let her cook a single thing.
She's really living that truth. That is wild.
Yeah.
So the midterms were this past week, and despite a few high-profile losses, particularly in Texas, shout out.
That's because a black man didn't run in Texas.
Shout out to O'Rourke. Listen, I want to see the receipts on Beto.
Listen, I love Beto. I went to college in Texas, like, long-time Beto, like, family supporter forever and ever and ever. I am happy for him. But also, this thing of, like, the way that his profile is raised, and I'm glad that he acknowledges it, is because he is in part because he is a handsome white man.
Right.
Yeah. He is not.
But is
more...
he that handsome?
Oh my.
For, listen, well, I'm
is
not.
That, is that not okay
listen,
to say?
No, no, no.
It's okay to say, but I feel like
some crazy woman did a Twitter thread this week about how she wanted better to like make her come.
No.
So,
listen, oh my God.
The white people have been wilding over him.
The white people are always wilding. The trap that I'm not going to fall into is I will say that like for society at large, Beto is handsome in the way that like white people judge handsomeness. But you know, like we are woke people here and we got a better standard. So
yes.
I'm just saying.
I think after Obama, there are certain men that you see they can't fill out an Oxford, right? And he can't truly fill it out.
But you know what the problem is that people think that people who are powerful look good. Like that's already part of it, right? It's like mm-hmm. if you're tall and you are thin, that's like check.
Yes. Right.
And then if you have power, it's like look at Barack Obama for real. I was like those ears. Look at the jeans this man is wearing.
First of all, again, if Barack anti-African. Obama just like stopped,
I know the ears was anti-African.
It
I'm
was
sorry
very...
to all of my
wow.
East African friends.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
On behalf
I'm
of
sorry.
Kenya.
But I'm just like saying it's that like the way that power makes like people are sheep. If somebody is, that's why like ugly men are always dating beautiful women all the time. I was like power and money count for everything.
Oh my God. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
No, no. Dorian called him.
Oh, listen, Obama is like campaigning again in his old clothes. Like you saw him last week. He was wearing that jacket and I was like, Michelle is letting him dress himself again. I don't like this.
What did Miss Dorian St. Felix say?
She called Beto a beautiful string bean. A beautiful, hardworking string bean of a man. I was like, that is it.
I can see
Dorian
that.
St. Felix.
Okay.
Well, like, I just mean that like you would be happy if like your white girlfriend married him. You know, you'd be like, good for you.
Oh yeah, like he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, like he seems like a good guy. He, you know, like he knows things.
Well, listen, you know? He did some very good work in Texas.
He did.
And if a few more liberals move in and we can get them evangelicals out of there.
Well, actually,
no, they're Californians.
Not, yeah, it's not people who are moving into Texas who are making, you know, helping with the blue drizzle, sprinkle, whatever it is. It's native Texans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So folks who move in actually tend to vote Republican.
Wow.
All of the exit polling showed this. It was 2-1, the California people who've moved to Texas, the gentrifiers. They're the ones.
They're voting Republican?
Yeah.
We can't blame the white women this time. I mean, they did not do well, but like the real problem is
people from my state.
Yeah, is the people from your state.
Because we're kicking them out because we're too Democratic.
Yeah, you got to kick them out to somebody else's state.
And they're dreaming of like, people think that Texas is the South and it's actually not. I mean, it's geographically the South.
It is culturally not the South.
Not culturally the South. I am from Dixie. It's like my specialty. And it's not what it is.
He's like, I feel my freest in Texas.
But people have romanticized it as this like you know, heartland of like Southern.
Real
ideals.
South. My family's from Tennessee.
Yes, so. That's real South.
Yeah,
yeah, like
actual
Maryland
South
is more the South than Texas.
Mm.
Like truly, culturally, Texas is very.
Okay.
And Texas is very big. Also, Texas is huge. People feel differently about it. Most of the way, I would say that Texans just don't want you to fuck with them. I would say that they're mostly like very independent people. They're very fair, and I think that the polling bears that out.
Yeah.
And it's all these people that are coming in. Who are just, you know,
gentrifiers
always.
Aside from that, it was actually a historic election in the sense that it had the highest voter turnout in decades and the highest number of women and people of color elected.
Hey, wow. Drizzle.
Unfortunately, Andrew Gillum in Florida and Stacey Abrams are still in limbo.
Yeah, but I feel good about that. I feel good that Stacey fought, that she, I think it should be standard operating procedure for Democrats if they come within a whiff of winning to not concede and to actually ask for them to count every single
vote.
Keep
a spine.
I mean, I get that Gillum was being nice when he
he was being nice.
First, and now there's a recount. He's like, okay, let's count these votes.
You know, Stacey put him on the group chat and she was like, what is wrong with you? She was like, don't make me look bad out here. Like, you gotta make him count every single vote.
Yeah, because like, she definitely would have looked like the crazy black woman in Georgia. Like, you gonna count off, you know, and I don't know, why did I put that voice on?
Well,
who taught you to hate yourself? Why are you doing that?
My grandmother, honestly, that's my grandmother's voice for other black women.
She had a backbone. She's not saying that, like, she won. She's just saying, count every single vote. Why don't we count all the votes? How hard can that be? It turns out it's very hard.
Well,
but you know what?
Andrew wouldn't have, you know, done that so early if he had, you know, Oprah in his ear, like Stacey did. Because, you know, Oprah went down in the final days of the Abrams campaign, joined her on stage, and encouraged Georgians, particularly black ones, to vote. She said, For anybody here who has an ancestor who didn't have the right to vote, you're choosing not to vote wherever you are in this state, in this country. You are dishonoring your family. You are disrespecting and disregarding their legacy, their suffering, and their dreams when you don't vote.
I'm going to let our sister Hannah take that one. Because I'm gonna flip this table right now.
Yeah. So I wrote about this. And, you know, I heard that. And a lot of the midterms run up, I just kept thinking, like, leave black people alone, man. Like, black people have been through enough like, we in this do country our share. And beyond. And if you look at the voter turnout, it's not that black people are sitting at home being like, I don't care about democracy. I don't care what happens to me. Like, none of that has been true, right? It's people showing up in record numbers, super high turnout. So all the condescension in all these like traumatic ways is just for who? Like, who are you doing this for? And what is the point of it?
For the ancestors.
No.
Like, it's about ancestor worship.
What? Oh my God.
It's Coco. Oh, how Coco explains the election.
Honestly, we need that. No, I think it was really frustrating, right? Because she knows the power of her platform. And I think to sort of come at people in this way when it's not necessary, especially when voting for black people and black people in Georgia in particular is not some sort of...
They vote.
Like, what? Right. But also like...
If they can.
Right. In the face of such odds, right? Like it's not just like walking by, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I'm bored. Let me go do this quick thing, right? It's an entire, you know, it's an ordeal. Mm-hmm. And so to like just downplay all of that, I think was really disappointing and like a missed opportunity fundamentally.
Mm-hmm. Well, but don't you think that like that's also part of this is a central frustration I've always had with like celebrity political activism, right? Yeah. Is that I think everybody should do their part. I was happy when Taylor Swift like actually got a backbone and did something. You can argue that it was late or whatever.
Sure.
I appreciate when anybody does.
Beyonce was late.
Yeah, but this,
oh my God.
This is the point I want to make.
People were dragging her for coming out for better 3 hours before the polls.
But I think that is worthwhile, right? It's like so when Oprah is going around, like the ancestor worship part of it is like side rolly. But when you show up 3 days before the election or like Diddy or whatever, and they're like, you should vote. I'm like, actually, where we need you guys is to register people to vote.
Right.
If you were doing this on when we need that surge of people to vote, that's fine. But then all you're doing is preaching to the choir. It's really easy. And then they also suck out all the energy in the room. Everybody's like, oh, my God, this celebrity is here. And I was like, actually, activists have been working here for a long time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time this is a distraction. But, you know, it's like Beyonce.
Well, that's why I supported Beyonce because, you know, she did.
She did the voter
Instagram
registration.
However, she was registering people to vote
at all her concerts. And, you know, but the thing is that, like, it does count for something when you, in this era where, like, some celebrities want to be political about some things and not others. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have to take a stance and you have to take one early. Again, it's like, do it with your whole chest or don't do it at all.
Speaking of our ancestors who were slaves. Well, some of us.
Wait. Well, I do some want to jump in on this for really, really quickly, just because
that's anti-diaspora. Okay.
No, one thing I want to say about this that does bother me, and it is a good segue into my play, I think, is that I think that like one of the other issues that I have with like you know the whole like the viral graphic that's always like, look how many white women voted for Republicans once again. What's
it's
wrong with you, white women?
It's better than from Mitt Romney, yeah. is crazy.
But it's like it's crazy. What's crazy to me is that like when people look at all the black people, like black people didn't go out and vote in 2016. They're like, and white women all voted for Trump. I'm like, are we just gonna ignore the fact that there are fully all these white men doing like
right?
most of the voting? We're all gonna give up on how they are the problem.
I don't like, know how to tell you this. Thing. That's literally how we live our lives. It's
that
like how
America.
You it's like how you ignore your father and then you fight with your mother. It's like that's yes. the story of this country.
But when like black celebrities sit on the, or like when I was literally on the train the day after of the day of the election, and this white lady was walking by looking at everyone, being like, did you vote? Did you vote? And she came to me and she was like, I don't see a sticker. And I was like, what? She's like, I don't see a sticker. I'm taking people to the polls. And I was like, I voted. And she's like, where's your sticker? And I
was like, also the concept of taking people to polls when you're on the subway, I'm like, don't bother me, bitch.
I was like, this wow. is violent. And I was like, I felt, and it felt so
is this how is this another
blackness.
How like white people and black people are different? Like, I'm like, this is a fundamental like
oh
if somebody came up to me on the train and was like, can I hold your hand to the polls? I would call 911 immediately. I'm like, I am joining the carceral state to lock you up because this is not okay.
But it's also like, what do you like? Do you not know the concept of someone like having an absentee or like not living in New York or like
right,
any of those?
Anything.
Like, do you just come
where
up with
your sticker?
Being like, where you got? Did you vote? No. Bitch.
Well, it's the but same, yeah. right? It's the same sort of operating logic as like black women, black people are gonna save us. It's
yeah.
Like, I don't. What if I was gonna go vote for somebody you don't want me to vote for? Like,
exactly.
Just, you know,
secretly
like,
black
you
women
have
been voting
to go
Republican
because I know you're gonna vote for a Democrat because look at you. You know, it's
yeah.
like what.
I might be Candace over here, y'all.
Ooh, right.
Oh my God. All right.
You put all right. All right.
What's going on with Candace and Kanye? Is that over?
Oh,
is
it's
that
so friendship over.
They're done. The girls are fighting.
Do you think that they're mostly fighting because of how ugly the logo was and he did not want to be associated?
Yes.
Because there are a lot of levels. Yeah. There are a lot of places he could have jumped off the train, but I was like, he did not want to be associated with this particular graphic for aesthetic reasons.
He's a Gemini. I understand that.
Jeremy, tell us a bit about Slay Play. I saw it.
Yeah.
I can't say can you too
tell
much.
Where
I can't.
Is tell your sticker?
Tell us how you feel.
Where is your sticker? Where is the ticket stub? Did you watch the play?
No, I was so nervous with you sitting in the room. I kept being like, oh my God, I have to watch his face, but I can't watch his face, but I need to watch his face. I know how the play is working on someone who doesn't know what the fuck the play is. Because no one gets to know what the fuck the play is, which is like my...
The play is a mystery, by the way.
Slay play is a mystery.
Yes. Some
that
shit jumps
dangerous.
Out at you.
I'm so glad I've met you and that you can explain this to me, because if a person was telling me this outside, I would think I was like on like NBC's To Catch a Racist or something. Like, what is going on here? You're like, it's called Slay Play. It's a mystery and you won't tell me what it's about? Like, no way.
Well, I mean, I think my director, who's a genius, is like out here being like, let's catch a racist. Because the first day we were talking about it, I was like, yeah, there's an intermission. He was like, why do you have an intermission in this play, baby? Why you got an intermission? And I was like, what are you talking about? This is a bad Robert O'Hara impression, by the way. And I was like,
Robert O'Hara is great.
Robert O'Hara is a genius. Yes. He's a genius. He's written some of my favorite plays. He wrote Booty Candy, Barbecue, Insurrection Holding History, like so many things. He's a genius. Anyway, he was like, why you can give these white folks a break? The slaves didn't get a break. And I was like, that is genius.
Wow.
That is genius. So I took out my
intermission. If somebody tweeted that, I would cancel them immediately. I would just be like, unsubscribe. This is too woke.
Why do you need a break at the Gap? No, I feel moved. I think that people should see the play because first of all, it shocked me. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then I was like, oh. And then I was like, okay. And then I was like, oh, he did that. And you do that. This is the second play of yours I have seen. And
where is your ticket? I want to see the
stuff.
I want the stuff.
I saw a rehearsal, okay? I saw that exclusive.
Wow.
That's not even built yet.
Wow. Okay? Did that.
It actually just got built yesterday.
Get on my level.
All right,
okay? I'm lounging here in my Lululemon Intent joggers. What are you doing?
Listen, I am also lounging right now, 100% silk everywhere, but I will say, your Lululemons, I might get them at the end of the day.
Yeah, they're good.
They look really good.
Yeah. Why'd you write this?
Oh God, it's so crazy. I think I wrote this. Oh yeah, because I don't know. I was in LA. You know, I was in LA. I was playing poker with a bunch of white folks all the time. This is where we met.
We met in a East Side of LA poker group. Just a bunch of white folks.
A lot of white gays.
Yes, me, you, and like
who was the most famous celebrity there?
When I showed up there, Lewis was the most famous celebrity because I used to love verbal voguing.
Yeah, Lewis Vertel used to do that too. I think that there have been real famous people.
Yeah, there have been real famous people. I mean, well, Frank Ocean went to the party a couple years ago.
Yeah, we also always have a holiday party at the end of the year. It's called Alcoholidays.
Oh my God.
Frank Ocean went 1 year, and I will never forgive my friend, Carter Schellen, who I'm going to call out by name,
because
his birthday was that same day.
Say his social security number.
So I went to Alcoholidays, and then I left and went to Carter's party, and then I got texts from people, Frank Ocean is here. Are you in the bathroom?
Yeah.
And I was like,
you got to cut your friend off.
Then the next year, Troy Sivan came.
Oh, I saw him yesterday.
Yeah.
Very pocket-sized.
Yeah.
Gemini.
My friend did not know who he was, and she asked him... for a photo, and he thought she wanted a photo with him, and she was like, "No, can you take a photo of me and Ira?" The photo was good though. Troy can take a good photo.
I love that. Yes. I love that.
Yeah. So you were in LA.
I was in LA, and I was surrounded by white people. I grew up in the South. I grew up in a place where, you know, identity is very static, you know, but because it's static, there's like a mutability to it in sort of entangled spaces. Sorry, I need to remember, you are on a podcast, not at Yale.
You can say, you can stop and say what you want to say.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Critic Media listeners read, Karen tells them to do it every week.
Just like, I thought I was on Pod Save America, then it was the Black Pod Save America, so I'm like, how do I speak?
Listen, some of us went to good schools on this podcast. Okay. It's cool.
I got a degree from Tish.
That is, Tish is slavery. Yes. Honestly, but slavery that you
that's
pay
why,
for.
That's why slave play really hit me, especially in the second act.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I did exactly what they did. Yeah. But you got to go see the play to know what I'm talking about.
Listen, I'm trying to get on this VIP tip now.
But okay, so anyway, so I started thinking a lot about like black and white entanglement and like what, like, you know, why I have been socialized to like, I like to be like basically like, a kept black body in white spaces. Like, you know, and that sort of processing of like what it meant to be socialized, it led me to a lot of books and a lot of reading. Like, I read a lot of Jarrett Sexton, a lot of Sadia Hartman. I read Fred Moten and like his like Blurring and Swirling and, you know, and then like plays started falling
Hannah
out.
And Amina are just being turned on by the mention of literature.
Listen, readers are leaders, okay? Yes. Okay? You already know my political platform. Read a fucking book.
Yes.
That's
yes.
how
Always.
We're getting free.
You said Jarrett Sexton. I was like, the anti-black world is global and it's horizon. Yes.
Oh my God, like all my theory friends are gonna freak the fuck out. They're like, no, but so I was reading all these like really exciting and amazing thinkers, and those thoughts were intersecting with like my lived experience. And then three plays fell out really quickly. So one of them was the play you saw. It was called Water Sports or Insignificant White Boys. The second, the other play that fell out of it was a play called Daddy, which is happening this season as well. And I think that that's what it was. And I mean, I'm at school last year. I wrote this play my first year at Yale, like in a fever pitch. Like, I wrote it over the school year, but I wrote like one act, like in its completion, or in its entirety, in like over a weekend. And everyone's like, this is really good. And they're like, when's the next one? I was like, I don't know. And like, cause like literally, like it was like I cut myself and bled all into the room. So I had to like fill up blood again. And then by the end of the next semester, I was able to like write over one long weekend again and wrote the second act. And we'd read it in class. We brought actors up from the city. And everyone was like, this is really good. Like, how does it? And I was like, I don't know. And then I, like, waited a little bit. And my teacher was like, well, you got to give me a full play before the end of the school year. So you're going to have to, I don't know this whole bloodletting process you're talking about, but you need to go ahead and just give me a play. So then the third act, I was just like, okay, Jeremy, this is all you have to give. And I just, like, wrote from the third act, gave it to her the last day it was possible to give it to her. And she brought me to her office, and she was like, I think this play is really special, and I hope you do it next year. And aww. Jennifer Kiger really helped me see what my play was doing. And then it got produced a year after it happened at school, which is crazy.
At the New York Theater Workshop.
Yes. It's not crazy.
It.
Yeah. It's blessings.
This
I love
black.
It.
Excellent.
I know, right?
Beyonce's going to come see your show.
Oh, my God. Please put that into the world. I was literally talking to someone about this last night. I was like, Beyonce and Jay-Z have to come see my show.
They support black
they
art.
They will. They love black art. Do you feel fully self-expressed in, like, now that you... like have produced like three bodies of work around, you know, like it was like that singular moment, I guess, at the poker show. And when you were thinking about all these ideas, like, do you feel like you've let it all out?
Yeah. I mean, it was so funny when I finished Slave Play, it was like, I got like two commissions. I finished Slave Play and I got like two commissions and I had just written a movie. So all these other people were like, what else do you want to write? And I was like, do I know?
Yes, that news did come out.
Yes.
And Jeremy, also, you co-wrote the Zola movie.
Was Jenixa Bravo.
Okay, way to bury the lead. First of all, we have to redo this entire interview from the top. I'm sorry.
Excuse me?
I don't want to hear about Yale things or Jarrett Sexton ever again. Let's start where it matters.
Well, I mean, Zola, Asia is the Jarrett Sexton of Twitter. Like, and that was literally my...
way to tie it all in together.
No, but that was truly my pitch in the meeting to, like, the Francos and Jenixa and Vince about why I wanted to do this movie. I was like, you guys, like, I don't look at her as some woman who wrote something on Twitter that I have to make better. I mean, she wrote truly like I was like, it's not an accident that black theater black Twitter called it the Thodicy, because it truly was an epic piece of writing in a new medium that we didn't have any like true poets in. And she was the first poet of that medium, and we owe it to her to treat this text that way.
I mean, when she said
Joyce
lost
Carol
in the
Oates
game,
will be very upset that you said that.
I know. When she said lost in the game and lost in the sauce.
Yeah.
I think about that once a day.
Yes.
I was like, you have changed my vocabulary.
Yes.
I'm gonna get lost in the chat. Sauce in Paris. Yeah.
My group chat is literally still named Vibing Over Our Hoism. To this day.
Oh my God. I love so many things. But like, like, let me tell you a story about how me and this white bitch fell out. Like, it's long, but bear with me. It's, like, still one of the best things. It grabs into you. And it's also, in that first tweet, there's a promise, right? There's a promise you're going to find out why she and this girl that she's smiling up with are going to fall. That's genius storytelling.
I like, know. She has a strong arc.
Yes.
Right. It had, like, the she did not have third act problems. No. Like, most Twitter dots, like, stories do. I'm always like, this is not gelling
well,
here.
Well, you know what? Yes.
The second act is a bit... waited. There's a lot that's happening. It's like he tries to kill himself. Yeah. He does that. You're like, how do you fit all this in?
I feel like the man in the story is who really drags the whole thing down. I was like, you are not necessary for the tension. And
which one?
I know,
which one? The black man or the white
black man?
Oh, X. Yes. You know, but Coleman Domingo's playing X in the movie, so he ain't dragging nothing down, honey. Oh yeah. I love it when we can let gays just play straight up studs.
I hate that you just made me sound like some sort of like crazed teen girl, but that is like he is like top 10 in the spank bank, so yes, that's exciting.
He wore to the Beale Street premiere, he wore like a crown, and I was like, what's that about?
I don't think, like, I can engage with this conversation too much in a post Me Too landscape, but because I think I work with him he works for me, I work for him. I don't know how it works, but we're working together now, so I'm professional.
Yes.
I think he's a talented
individual. Work with him.
You know what, Jeremy? I want to say I am so happy that I got you on the show before you are too booked and busy to do anything. Keep it related.
Oh, my God.
Thank you for coming.
The three of us are going to start a podcast competing with yours. Right.
Yeah, are we just going to talk about, like black, like...
Thodicy.
Yes, the Thodicy.
And Jared Sexton.
Yes,
let's go.
Yes, Jared Sexton, Sadia Hartman. It'll be called The Reading List.
You got Wilderson feelings, so do I.
Oh, my God. Yes! Oh my God! All wait, hold on. Where do you fall on the Wilkerson, Moten, Sexton?
Oh my God. Like,
can we just talk about that for 3 seconds?
I know, but this is like where it's a very serious Sophie's Choice.
Yes.
And I feel like it makes and breaks friendships.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna say something that might be not okay.
Okay.
I love Moten as a poet, but is she a theorist?
Ooh.
Okay.
Question mark.
Well, we're going to leave you with that. When we're back, we're going to talk about the poets at the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show.
Oh, yeah.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new Quick Caribbean Escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about... work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
So the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show was filmed this past Thursday right here in New York City. And it's been just as non-inclusive as it's always been. The runway featured Gigi Hadid, Bella Hadid.
Muslim girls. Hello, inclusivity.
Kendall Jenner. Adriana Lima. All of whom were not bigger than a size 2. Last week, Ed Razek, an executive for Victoria's Secret, also came under fire for making off-color comments about why the show isn't more inclusive. He said that he didn't want to include transsexuals because the show is a fantasy. And he added that if you're asking if we've considered putting a transgender model in the show or looked at putting a plus size model in the show, we have. We attempted to do a TV special for plus sizes. No one had any interest in it. Still don't. He later apologized if his comments came across as offensive. And to be clear, we absolutely would cast a trans model. We've had trans models come to castings, but like many others, they didn't make it.
I wonder why, sir. The only fantasy here is that this man thinks that his company makes relevant lingerie. Like, that's right. The first thing. When you
not
are more,
with Fenty out here.
Right. When you are more known for doing a fashion show on TV that most people do not watch than the actual clothes that you make, you should probably be worried about that as a business.
Or at least paying attention.
Right. Like, Victoria's Secret is not a... It's like the bottom of like not being inclusive. Like I'm talking like even women who are generally seen as smaller women right. within the fashion industry cannot find bras that fit them
right.
at Victoria's Secret.
Right. Which or bras that are for them and not for other people.
Right. Oh, right. Everything
so
in
crazy.
Victoria's
I
Secret.
I feel like I'm finally learning the secret.
That's Victoria's Secret. You can't wear anything at her house. That's her secret. Nothing in her closet fits. But you know what I mean? It's like there's nothing in Victoria's Secret that is not about the male gaze, which I'm like, I don't know if they're following societal trends. This is not why most people buy lingerie. It is not why people get out to buy these clothes. And also, they're going to get eaten alive by other brands who just cater to more people. I've never understood this. Why would you not want to make more money? Like, I don't think
right.
diversity is not a moral imperative, but if it is a capitalist imperative, right. why wouldn't you want to make more money for serving more bodies? That makes no sense to me.
All I know is on the song R.E.M. on Sweetener.
Unsubscribe.
Okay.
On Sweetener,
okay,
Ariana
I'm
said,
going with you.
What about La Perla? Let Vicky keep her secret.
Oh, well. So Victoria's Secret has been dead. What's the point?
I don't understand. The whole ecosystem of that world makes no sense to me.
Right, like, because there's Lane Bryant, which took a jab at Victoria's Secret in 2015 with their I'm No Angel campaign.
Mm-hmm.
There is...
Playful Promises.
Third Love, Rihanna, Savage, Fenty. There are other options.
Right, and also there are a lot of people who write very smartly about this stuff, like
Cora
Harrington, who runs The Lingerie Addict.
And has a book out.
Yeah, and has a book out that I think everybody who wears lingerie or likes to see people in lingerie should read.
The book is called An Intimate Detail, How to Choose, Wear, and Love Lingerie. And
yeah.
That's Cora Harrington.
And the book is great, actually. It's all illustrated, so like that makes it more inclusive. The language is completely gender neutral in the book. It is an education in the actual like garment work, the work and the labor that goes into making those kinds of clothes, and teaches you like, you know, both the fashion of it and also the practical like why we wear undergarments, and also wrestles with the like, what does it mean to wear these kinds of clothes for yourself? What does it mean to wear them as a tool of seduction? And so when I think about the fact that there is somebody like that who is an independent person who is doing all of the smart work that most fashion publications do not do, that like most people who comment on this stuff don't do, and you know, she doesn't get like half of the acclaim or the credit that she should get, and she also like puts you on to like brands that do better work.
Yes.
And you know, that like this asshole executive of Victoria's Secret, like, you know, it's so like, yes, a man at Victoria's Secret is telling you like why he doesn't think that certain kinds of bodies should wear the clothes that he has imagined for us.
Well, do we think just like some people still want to look like this idea of sexy, you know, because I mean,
but nobody looks that way.
We're still in an age though where people like, you know, use their bodies as a commodity, you know, like I can't scroll through Instagram. It's not just, I mean, it's weird that we only see ever like the Victoria's Secret fashion show, because I'm like, I scroll through Instagram all the time seeing a different gay thought somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where's their fashion show? Because it's like,
right.
I get that same thing every day, you know? It's like,
and
you're
it's so much more interesting.
But you're inundated with the likes, with the body pressure, with this is what is selling on Instagram, at least, you know?
Yeah, but I don't think it all has to be, you know, I think the beauty of sort of, you know, like whether it's a Fenty or whether it's other folks who are kind of coming up now, you have like a third love, and these folks aren't sort of making the kind of like mass marketed or like certainly aren't making the same money as Victoria's Secret, right? But there are different avenues of seeing your body represented as something that is worth desiring or that is worth just like living in and being proud of. And I don't think that Victoria's Secret's fashion show has ever occupied that space or that the store has ever been that for people. So I think the more we sort of seek that out in the market.
So it was just really sort of name brand that got people into the store. It's like a fun
fantasy thing that you watch and you sort of like, you know, you go, you buy your like love spell in the little beauty store. But it's like we're...
And they were the only ones. Right. For a long time, they were the only... There was no competition for them.
Right.
When it especially came to that kind of mass market. Like,
right. The like mall space, right? Literally. Yeah. Like, in the mall.
Back in Milwaukee, it was like, yeah. That was, yeah. You saw... It was so big.
But it's also like, I don't...
It was really, like that and like an Abercrombie.
Yeah,
thing,
but like,
you know,
but who cares about like pink at Victoria's? You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, first of all, that like the price point is not interesting to everyone. The whatever the fashion itself is not that interesting. And then I was gonna go back though to that thing, Ira, that you were saying about scrolling on Instagram and seeing things. I will say though that like from my own perspective, that the people in my feed who often take off their clothes have made for like such a better. They've made like my corner of that. The corner of my internet so much richer because I see a diversity of bodies. And so in a place where, you know, like I would say that like for me, that has been very healing and it has been very, it has like challenged a lot of my own body dysmorphia and it has challenged a lot of my own confidence about how I feel about my body because just, you know, like seeing women who are like here, just you're just like, oh, everybody has a different body, you know, like that
which
is
which should be a sort of universally understood concept. And
bodies
yet,
are different. And then and also like because it is social media and we are so aware of like retouching and all of, you know, and like surgery. Nobody is honest about the plastic surgery that is happening. I'm the most naive person about plastic surgery. I once threw a party for a coworker who I thought was who said that she was out for medical reasons. And I thought, so I was like threw her party, like organized a meal train and everything. That woman came back 3 weeks later with new boobs. I was like, this is wild. Like, I can't believe you did that to me. But anyway, like, I'm not saying this to say, like, I think plastic surgery is actually totally fine. I think that it is just a thing that we should talk about and body manipulation and when we have this conversation of who is taking their clothes and what do they look like.
Right.
But I will say that, like, if you follow people who look differently and you follow people who are honest about it, it actually, for me, has reinforced how much more, like, I should be kinder to myself. And how much, like, you know, I'm just like, oh, like, the good thing about being, I don't know, like, being a non-white man or even being, like, not a cis man is that I was like, oh, you get stimulated by so much more sexually.
Oh, my God.
And you have a more, I don't know, robust, like a more robust appetite and open mind for what is sexy and what is hot. And so, I don't know, like, Instagram has been, like, very good for me for that. Now I have, like, a secret thought account that I just, like, follow.
I've been thinking about that. Oh. I've been thinking it might be time.
I do it, and every time I get down, I'm like, who are the hotties in my feed? And let me tell you, like, instant pickup.
I mean, Cora's blog is that for me in a lot of ways, a laundry addict, because it's like, here are, you know, one, places to think about shopping. Not that I'm even out here buying mad lingerie like that, but you know what I mean? Like, just to know. And then she's been so committed to, like, showing lingerie and all kinds of, like, really, like, clothing and sort of intimate forms of clothing on, like, such a wide diversity of bodies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even, like, she models a lot of the sets that she does. And, you know, it sounds so cliche where you're like, oh, like, a black woman and, you know, like, I see myself. But truly, I was like, I've been reading fashion magazines my whole life. I could not recall, like, on a large scale seeing black women in, like, in any kind of underwear campaign.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like,
or
that is also...
Or certainly one that wasn't just, like, a black bra.
Totally.
Black panties,
it's, like,
right?
A black bra or whatever. And, you know, or even just, like, the conventions that black women have around, like, the kinds of colors that you can wear.
That's what I was thinking. She has a set in, like, this really beautiful, like, emerald. And I remember being like, do I need emerald lingerie? Like,
yes, you do, Dorothy.
Well, I have a set now. Okay. So, thanks, Cora.
But so, yeah, you know, it's, like, I think, I don't know, I like that a lot. I like also that she like challenges these brands because, you know, there are like many brands now that advertise on podcasts and they're always like, we have the most range of bras or whatever. Like they think that they're being woker than Victoria's Secret. Yeah. But the truth is that like they're also not catering
right.
to everybody.
It's like we go to a double D.
Right. You like, know, what? Or like, yeah, exactly. And also people just don't, women have so much shame around, especially like bras, you know, because I spoke to Cora about this on our podcast and she was saying, we were talking about like the myths of,
you know, like how every woman doesn't know their bra size. Because I remember the Oprah episode about that, which was like, everybody in America doesn't know their bra size. And it's exactly how Oprah sounds. You know, like it was such a like an iconic Oprah thing.
And she was like,
thing.
If you don't know your bra size, you are disrespecting the ancestors.
Oh my God. Exactly. Right. But Cora's whole like point about this that was so smart is that this is a thing that we tell women to, you know, like to make them feel bad, where the truth is that like, no, actually everybody's body is different. Also, every single day your bra size could be different based on like where you are hormonally, where you are, you know, like whatever, all this stuff. And she was like, I don't know. It was such an awareness of you should know how the clothes that you wear are made and you should know why they are made and you should know how you wear them and how, you know, like how to get them for you. And so I appreciate that. So I don't know. Victoria's Secret should shut down and give her every single penny instead.
Well, you know, there's also this growing backlash now, you know, because there was an interview in the Daily Beast. A woman, Jocelyn Ratzer, she quit her job at Victoria's in Orlando because of the trans comments.
Good for her.
You know, a lot of people are starting, you know, a lot of backlash on the internet as well. Even Carly Kloss and Lily Aldridge.
Carly Trump?
Carly Kushner. <Ooh.
laughs> Listen, I heard she's a tech lady. She codes now.
Oh God!
Listen,
STEM.
I know, but it's also so cruel when I think about it from like a brand perspective. You know, it's just first of all, if when you were going out of your way to make trans people and gender non-conforming people and non-binary people feel bad, you should really like. I just only wish bad things for you.
Right.
It is. Life is already hard enough for people in different bodies who want to just
exist.
Buy underwear
exist.
And, like, and exist. Like, this is not, you know, and so...
I just want some double tap.
You know, so it just, like, that frustrates me a lot, and it frustrates me that as a company, Victoria's Secret is not taking a stronger stance on that. I was like, first of all, trans people are the future of your company, and they are your, like, they are potentially your customers, and you should treat them with dignity.
Well,
and as a company, like, you should be aware of that. Also, it's 2018. That stuff is not... Like, we're not asking you to do anything here. There's no accommodation that needs to be made. It's like, just don't be dicks, thank you, and take our money.
Mm. Right. I think it's a basic premise. And then you think about the fact that so much, like, so many trends, like, fashion-wise, are dictated, like, originally by trans women. So the gall of taking those ideas and being like, here's an aesthetic that we like that originated from these women who we don't want, we not forget not accommodating explicitly. Like, we don't even want to lend credence to the idea of their humanity. Like, that is a wild thing to do and to take a stance on. Like, when you don't have to, you could literally be quiet. Or, you know, like, there are just so many ways of moving around that and not...
As Kara says, just say nothing.
Nothing. Just say... I know, but people always go out of their way to say hateful things. They're always saying the quiet thing out loud, and they're always telling on themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you both for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
When we're back, keep it. And we're back with my favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It. Wait, hold on. I think I'm getting a phone call. Karen Lewis.
Oh my gosh.
You really fooled them with that brilliant bit you just did.
I wanted it to, you know, to be a fun surprise for the audience.
You could have said you were getting paged or a fax came in, but no, just a call.
His two-way pager was blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
I got a message from you on Excel. how is L.A.?
I just bought my first chapstick for the season, which I am disappointed about. As you know, I am unfriendly with this season. Kara is trying to break me into fall as a concept.
And Lewis came to my fall ball.
I did.
And
yes. You threw a party for your 30th, which I'm sorry, I missed.
I know, today's actually my birthday, which is funny.
I know, happy birthday.
But Lewis came to fall ball and wore like 8 polos and I think got in the spirit.
Yes, and also, excuse me, I met Kara's mom and dad and we talked about how I'm going to be invited to Louisiana and you aren't this time, Ira, so take that, dumbass.
Okay, well, I'm flying to Paris, so I'm good.
Okay.
But
good
have
riddance?
Fun.
Thanks.
All right, we're doing Keep It. Let's do this. Kara, what's yours?
So my Keep It revolves around Jill Scott, who...
Living her life like it's golden.
Living her like it's something. Jill Scott...
Part of the detective agency.
The number one ladies detective. That was actually a good show. Jill Scott was at a concert, and basically she gave a microphone... A blowjob? Is that how we'd say it?
Definitely. No, she was like cradling imaginary microphone balls, too.
Yeah. It went on for much too long. But the thing is, my keep it isn't to Jill Scott. It was to the entire internet, where now my entire Twitter feed is people talking about Jill Scott and her ghost blowjob. And I feel like there's some things we should just say, you know what? We're all not going to talk about this. We're just going to let it happen, and we're going to live our lives. Do we all need to spend the next 3 days talking about this? I don't think we do. I would like everyone to keep it, to keep their tweets. I don't want to hear about this anymore. We should have let this pass gently into the night and never spoken of it again.
Also, correct me if I'm wrong, both Tina Turner and Donna Summer have a history of like fellating microphones, so it's not even that revelatory, honestly. I'm happy for Jill Scott. And also, what's that song she had? Let's Take a Long Walk. That's still a great song. But...
I mean, she has, and then it was a lot of people being like, oh, you must not know Jill Scott. Her songs are sexy.
I'm like, a lot of people's songs are sexy. That doesn't mean they're like sucking down a mic.
I just find it stressful, and I want it desperately to be done. It's like this. It's like I already know that the rest of the week on Twitter, there's a meme hasn't started yet, but I feel it coming.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's probably coming. I'm just irritated that it's now taking up space in my brain. And before I didn't know any of that. I didn't see her greasing up her hands to do whatever it was she was doing to the mic. I didn't know about any of this a day ago, and I would like to go back to those simpler times.
Well, Lewis.
Yes.
Your keep it. Both of ours are similarly tied to the same subject.
Sure.
I have been sad today because Stan Lee passed away.
That's correct.
And I think most people who know me know how much... his comic books meant to me.
I know your damn t-shirts, if that's what you mean. Yes.
Yes, my Spider-Man tattoo as well.
I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. But our keep it's are both Stan Lee related. I'm going to let you go first.
Okay, first, I mean, it pains me to say keep it to Gwyneth Paltrow because she is such a one-of-a-kind human being who deserves everything and has it. But Gwyneth Paltrow on Instagram the other day posted a picture of herself with Chris Pratt wearing this $615 dress that, you know, is the Gwyneth color, like hard beige with glitter on it. And the caption is this: "For my pal who asked, this retrofit dress now for sale in the Goop shop. Thanks for the hug, Pratt. Update. I just heard about Stan Lee. He will be so missed. What a genius and always so lovely. True gentleman. Gwyneth, you can just make a new post where you commemorate his life. You don't have to like stamp this onto an advertisement for an oatmeal-colored gown.
What's so funny is I saw the post before the update, and even then I was like, is this a picture of you and Chris Pratt, or is this an ad?
Right. She's like, can you believe it? I know Chris Pratt. It's like, I think I already knew that.
What does that have to do? What do those two things even
Nothing.
Have to do with each
no,
other?
No, it is literally like a sliding doors into a world where she made another post about Stan Lee. But no, she made it into this one. So anyway,
yeah,
she looks ravishing.
I'm imagining her finding out about Stan Lee and like, oh my God, how do I was just trying to sell a dress and now everyone will be mad at me that I'm not talking about Stan Lee. Update.
Right. She thinks she's like, I solved a problem here. I'm talking about a dress and Stan Lee now.
Are you somewhat comforted by the fact that you now know 100% that she does her Instagram posts?
Yes, I guess
because
you're
there's
right.
There's no way anyone with any sense who was getting paid to do that would have
right.
thrown the update in.
She's definitely an entrepreneur yeah. and runs her own brand. And if you can't afford $150 oatmeal, that's your problem.
This is true. I kind of liked the dress, though, I got to say.
No, I mean, like, Gwyneth knows what she's doing silhouette-wise. So.
I mean, in 6:15 for her, that's basically like a Target run.
She's like, this is my J-Lo from Sears shit, yeah. plebes.
my keep it came to me in the middle of the night. I was trying to get some sleep, and I opened Twitter, and lo and behold, Armand Hammerhead himself.
That's code for Army Hammer, everybody. Moving on.
Army Hammer shot off a very dumb tweet. He said, "So touched by all of the celebrities posting pictures of themselves with Stan Lee. No better way to commemorate an absolute legend than putting up a picture of yourself."
Interesting. Why is he so? So is he best friends with Stan Lee? What's the bitterness?
Was he in a Marvel movie?
He was in a Marvel movie.
What was he in?
I know someone wrote. Someone responded to him with. They worked with him, and he responded, "Me too."
That's what that means.
I'm trying to remember what thing he was in.
I'm sure it was wonderful, and he was wonderful in it. Guys, is he a great actor, or is he just hot and seems nice? I don't know. He's an okay actor. He was the fourth best performance in Call Me By Your Name.
You know what's funny, though? I don't 100% disagree with him, because there is some... I generally do not like the celebrity morning social media cycle that happens. And I do think there is something rather narcissistic about... within minutes of learning that someone's died, you post a picture of yourself with them to prove. Like, I actually don't really like that. I understand the urge. Like, I get it. And if this is your friend, but in particular, when it wasn't your friend, when it was just like you met them one time on a red carpet and you have the picture, it does feel a bit disingenuous. But I mean, I kept
the
that
people
thought to
who
myself.
Were doing it. The people who were doing it too were people like who were actually in the Avengers. You know,
and yeah, like, it was like Lupita Nyong'o. It was like fair,
yeah,
right, right.
It's like you worked with him on this movie with a character that he created. Like, that's understandable. No one would expect you to do it, because I just Google it, and he was in the animated series Stan Lee's Mighty Seven, where he did voice acting. It's like, okay, no one's gonna expect you to put up a photo with Stan Lee, bitch.
Can I tell you something? I'm still hung up on. I was trying to get to sleep, so I checked Twitter.
Right, yeah. You have a disorder. What is that? Don't normalize your syndrome in front of us.
Also, I'm just starting to think that maybe Armie Hammer might be an asshole.
You know what I will say, though? Taking pictures with Stan Lee in particular seems like a kind of industry that exists. Like, he's a cameo-oriented person, so there's like particular value in getting a picture with him. So I concur that posting a picture with him right after he died feels a little like, come on now. But at the same time, everybody also has those pictures, so it also seems appropriate.
I remember when Anne Helen Peterson wrote an article about him for BuzzFeed, you know, about why Hollywood kept giving him chances.
Armie Hammer, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Armie Hammer, because he kept, you know, having box office failures, and then he finally got Call Me By Your Name. And he was, you know, mad about that and deleted his Twitter account.
Oh, yeah.
And then he came back. But then I remember when months later, when there was this bad profile of Jennifer Lawrence in Vanity Fair, Anne Helen tweeted that, you know, she just thought that the profile was banal and didn't really offer much insight into her. Army replied to her, "And your glass seems chronically half empty. Maybe try meditating or even medicating. # chill pill needed."
Oh, someone should smack him for that.
Chill pill needed. Is this Blossom? Who fucking says chill pill?
He has the Ryan Reynolds effect, where he could not open a movie to save his life, got one good shot that was really based off of the material and had very little to do with the actual star in it, and then now thinks that he's like a legitimate movie star, or whatever it is.
Right. No shade to the man from Uncle, though, which was pretty good. Moving on.
I fucking love the man from Uncle, mm-hmm. But Army, you were like the only one who didn't get a nomination for Call Me By Your Name.
Well, Timothy was the only one who got a nomination, but there was buzz for everybody else, including my man, Michael Stahlberg.
Yeah, I mean, sorry. I mean, the movie also got, you know, Best Picture. I mean, it was just a very lauded and buzzed about film.
Right.
And none of the buzz was about Army. Well, yes, I'd forgotten that Michael Stuhlbarg was tragically denied his Oscar again.
I think both you and Army should just stay off Twitter at 2 a.m.
Right.
And we'd have a lot fewer problems.
Yes, I certainly would.
You were part of the problem, Ira. I'm glad we diagnosed that.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm certainly glad that you two called in to be rude to me. I miss you too.
I'll see your dumb ass soon enough.
Yeah.
All right. I'm never coming back. I'm going to do the show with Catherine Deneuve and Rita Ora.
Who are very big wherever the fuck they are. Yes.
I guess that's our show. I want to thank you two for calling in. I want to thank Hannah Georges. I want to thank Aminatou Sow. And I want to thank Jeremy O. Harris for also being on the show today.
I fucking love Jeremy O. Harris and know him from a poker game I go to. So
we talked about you on the show.
You play a poker? What?
Isn't that wild?
You go to a regular poker game?
But it's like gay poker and the stakes are, it's like $5 buy-in and a smile.
Yeah, we talk about you on the show, Lewis.
Oh, good, good. I love buzz.
Please fill in Kara about how you play poker, because I could, I just imagine her face.
I now have to go and see this.
Yeah, she shrieked. Yeah.
All right, I'll talk to you all later.
Goodbye.
Bye. That's our episode. We'll see you next week with our Thanksgiving spectacular.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.